A ceremony fit for a statesman. Fidel V. Ramos, the 12th president of the Philippines, laid to rest at the Heroes Cemetery. The Philippine economy grows less than expected in the second quarter. And former U.S. President Donald Trump says FBI agents raided his Florida home. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Welcome to the program. For those watching online, glad you could join us today. Well, the Philippines witnessed this morning the first state funeral for a president in more than two decades, a fitting ceremony for the man fondly called FVR. The nation bidding its final farewell to Fidel V. Ramos, the country's 12th chief executive, who was laid to rest at the Libingan ng Mga Bayani this morning. Our very own Katrina Domingo now joins us with an update. Kat, over to you.
Carmina, President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. made a last-minute appearance at the interment of former President Fidel V. Ramos, his distant relative from his father's side of the family. The incumbent president was seen standing beside former First Lady Ming Ramos as members of the Armed Forces of the Philippines folded the Philippine flag that was draped over the casket that contained the urn of FVR. It was quite a feat to see, Carmina, because if we recall, Marcos Jr.'s father and namesake, former President Ferdinand Marcos Sr., appointed Ramos to head the Philippine Constabulary during his decades-long reign. But in 1986, Ramos withdrew from the Marcos dictatorship and supported the People Power Revolution, which forced the Marcos family to step down from power and flee from the Philippines. But after being elected as Philippine president in 1992, it was also Ramos who allowed Marcos Sr.'s remains to be flown back to the Philippines from Hawaii. So Marcos Jr.'s appearance at the Hero Cemetery today gives us a signal that ties may have already been mended between the two families. Now, Carmina, after the formalities and tradition, Mrs. Ramos gave a speech to thank those who have supported her husband as a military general, as a Philippine president, and as a patriarch. Here's an excerpt of that speech.
Maraming salamat sa inyo lahat sa tulong nyo. Alam nyo, mahirap ang buhay sa military. Pero kinaya namin. Tumulong si President Ramos, kayang-kaya niya, at he was able to raise 5 daughters, 8 grandsons, and 5 granddaughters. Mahirap mag-adjust. 2 taon nasa bahay siya, 2 taon nasa probinsya. Tapos, nag-volunteer pa siya 2 taon sa Vietnam. Kaya maraming salamat sa tulong niyo. At sabi niya, kaya natin ito. Maraming salamat. Kaya ba natin? Maraming salamat sa inyo lahat.
Carmina, earlier we discussed about the Tobacco stick and the red ballpen souvenirs, but one of Ramos's close aides clarified that those will not be handed out to the guests who attended his interment, but will instead be kept as a personal memento of his staff. Carmina, the interment rites at the Libingan ng Mga Bayani ended minutes after noon, and right now, as you can see right behind me, some members of the Ramos family are making their way back to the chapel for a gathering amongst themselves, and we are expecting them to collect the wreaths and the flowers that were offered to the late president here. Carmina.
Kat, in the beginning of your report, you said that the presence or the appearance of President Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. was a last-minute appearance. What did you mean by that? It wasn't planned that he was going to be there during the interment of the late President Fidel V. Ramos, Kat?
Carmina, Carmina, for days we have been talking to military officials who have been assigned to organize the event. We also had a few interviews with some family members, and never did they mention that Marcos Jr. will be attending the internment rites at the Libingan ng Mga Bayani. We can't say that it wasn't really planned, but it was not announced to the media, mainly due to perhaps security concerns of the president. It was not on the president's schedule this morning, and it was not on the president's schedule yesterday as well. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Katrina Domingo there joining us live. Take care, Kat. Back here in the newsroom, during the final night of former President Ramos's wake, one of his grandsons called on the Filipino people to fight and keep his legacy alive. Those who are dear to him are bravely heeding that call. Michelle Long reports.
It was one of the most iconic moments of the 1986 EDSA Revolution, and one that will eventually define the legacy of former President Fidel V. Ramos, a legacy and an important part of Philippine history, which one of his grandsons fears is under attack.
The history of EDSA has sadly become a matter of the present culture war debate. In those politicized narratives, we often lose sight of simpler unifying truths. That the EDSA revolution was bloodless in it of itself can be thought of as a miracle. That the AFP did not fracture, that this country was spared a potential civil war before, during, and after EDSA is one of FVR's greatest, most enduring, and perhaps underappreciated legacies.
But those whose lives were touched by FVR vowed to keep that memory alive.
In 1987, after I think the 1987 coup, he gathered his commanders, his key commanders, and basically told them, we are going to hold the line. We're going to make sure that we defend democracy and freedom, which we fought hard for.
We had just said goodbye to President Cory, and this was now President Fidel V. Ramos. So the task at hand was what? Was to be able to say to our people that it was worth the EDSA revolution. It was already institutionalizing the foundations of a good democracy.
He did it by action. He defended democracy. He respected constitutional processes. Walang mga pinakulong na mga media. Wala siyang binan sa palasyo. Wala siyang pinasarang mga newspapers. Walang ad boycott. So for that alone, I guess it speaks more than any word can describe this.
For his family, while the former president wore many hats, they want him to be remembered as someone who will inspire Filipinos to continue the fight and continue protecting our hard-fought democracy.
Fidel V. Ramos was many things to many people. A son, a brother, a soldier, a scuba diver, a loving husband and father, a warrior in battle, and a golfing buddy. By his life, FVR has set the ultimate example. But for all of his astonishing achievements, let us remember, FVR was just a man, a person, a human being, as are we all. Mortal, yes, even flawed perhaps, and yet just as capable of the same heroic acts and almost boundless achievement. He was the best of us. But if I've learned one thing from him, above all else, it is that the best is in us all. Now it is time for this old soldier's well-deserved rest. He fought the good fight. He has finished his work. But we have not. I saw that one eminent historian referred to FVR's passing as the passing of a generation. Let us instead think of it as the passing of the torch.
A marching order in honor of an exceptional man. Michelle Long, ABS-CBN News.
For former Finance Secretary Roberto de Ocampo, the late former President Ramos truly embodied his nickname, Steady Eddie. De Ocampo says Ramos was never one to panic, even when the Asian financial crisis of the 90s hit the Philippines.
Both of us, and I have to include in the team facing that Asian crisis, the late Gabby Singson, who was also very close to FVR, all of us, we're not the types to press the panic button and start panicking the rest of the public. Instead, we looked at it as calmly as we could, and decide from what were the parameters to be addressed, what actions steps to take in a steady eddy manner. Mm-hmm. You don't just suddenly press the panic button and put in draconian measures when they are not necessary.
And for more on the legacy of the late former President Ramos, we're now joined by one of his cabinet members, former Tourism Secretary Mina Gabor. Secretary, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you, Karina.
It's Carmina, ma'am.
Carmina, sorry.
No worries. A lot of people make that mistake. Anyway, as you were watching the state funeral, as you saw the images, what was going through your mind as the whole nation bid farewell to your former boss?
You know, as a military man, one thing that came to mind is that he was always a marketing man, surprisingly, you know. And he was a president who showed not only care for the people, you know, every time we went out, he would have that enormous human relations, no? He does not only pat the back, you know, I've seen him really embrace people from all walks of life. And this is something that has always remained very etched in my mind. As a marketing man, you remember that he played with Tiger Woods in Clark. And then he was a communications person. You know, he was the first to actually use the digital. And every time there was a state visit or some, you know, VIPs or even the cabinet member, he would take pictures. And in a few minutes, it will be with us, you know, with all his comments.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting how he did it.
Well, Secretary, he was quite the charmer and the talker.
Yeah. He was, I would imagine that he actually loved ecotourism and sustainable tourism. Mm. In his columns in the Daily Bulletin, he always reminded people that, you know, care for the environment was foremost in all of the things that we were doing. And I remember during the Boracay incident, he was the first to actually swim in Boracay to show people that there was no coliform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that
yeah,
coliform would only be in the fresh water and not in the sea. Mm-hmm. So this is something that he always managed to do.
And even after he long vacated the post, Secretary, you know, he would continue to write about climate change in his column, continue to write about preserving the environment. And he would also write about the former leaders preparing for future pandemic diseases.
Yeah. In many ways, I would remember that he would come to the school because he was our senior advisor for 12 years. Carmina, he was the International School of Sustainable Tourism, and he loved to be with the youth, you know, and every time the young people is around, you know, he would actually gather them and give them talks about climate change, ecotourism, sustainable, how to respect the environment, and he would go scuba diving, but with a cost, no? He would start cleaning up, and I remember that in Pangasinan, you know, when he started scuba diving, there were almost 3 or 4 truckloads of basura that we got from that area. Mm. So he always coupled his penchant for tourism with something that is more remarkable, like cleaning up the seas or, you know, cleaning up the... I remember during the APEC preparations, he asked everybody to make sure that the gutters were clean wherever the people will be passing by.
Mm. You know, his DNA, it's all about following orders, giving commands, because he was a military man. But once he became president, he was known to be a consensus builder. He was there to build consensus among his cabinet members, among his party mates. Can you share with us any experience that... put you in the middle of that, maybe not believing at first what he was trying to engage you in, but later on giving way, compromising a bit, Secretary?
Yeah. So many incidents. For example, there was this cabinet meetings that were held in the provinces. and whoever, whatever was the special thing of the province, he will call the secretary or the cabinet secretary to be the one in charge. And I remembered I was in charge in Abra, and there was rain, heavy rain, Carmina, very heavy rain, so that the flight could not take off. And eventually it subsided, and the pilot decided to push through with the flight. And all of a sudden, there was I look at the window, and it was a big fire, you know. And I could hardly speak, but then Louis Lagdamel was beside me, and I pushed him, and I said, there's fire. And all of us rushed, you know, to get to the gate of the airplane. And when we came down, and everybody was just saying, oh, Mina, I don't think we should proceed with Abra. You know, first we have the rain and now the fire. Mm. And I remember Joey Kalimlim, and I said, Joey, can you please get in touch with the president? He's in Malacañang. He might be taking off. And so we called him, and true enough, when Joey said, sir, may we ask your plan for Abra? There was heavy rain and there was fire. I know. I can hear in the radio. He says, I just sent another plane for you. Remember, people are waiting for us in Abra. I cannot delay this. So we all went off to Abra praying that everything will be okay. So these are some of the things that, you know, makes him very memorable in terms of the way he did it.
Now, Secretary, a while ago you were talking to former Finance Secretary Bobby De Ocampo, and he was telling us about that little room in Malacañang where the president would send, sort of like a parent, sending you to the corner, expecting you to find solutions at the end of the day through bull sessions and really conversations. Were you ever an occupant of that room, Secretary?
Yes.
You were?
Yes.
With whom?
With Ramos of BNR during the Boracay conflict.
And did it serve you well?
Yes, because, you know, I had to ask him to apologize because the sea was not really with coliform, but it was the fresh water that was with coliform, which is a deep well. And so I said, you have to ask for, you know, an apology because people are losing their jobs. You know, small businesses in Boracay are closing shops. Nobody wants to go to Boracay. You have to do something. So after, you know, some explanations, eventually Ramos decided, okay, I will apologize. And so he went to the press and apologized.
Mm-hmm. And how is that? I mean, did that become sort of, I mean, now that you look up, you look back at it, it's sort of silly. But then it served its purpose.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
And were there many, many bull sessions that happened, and how long would those bull sessions take?
Those sessions actually would last for about half an hour to an hour or two, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then the president would come and see to it that everything's resolved?
No. He does not come in. When the cabinet starts to get together, he will just say, okay, did you resolve your problem? He must be able to answer, you know, if we resolve or not, you know.
were there any problems to your recollection that were put through that little room and yet it came out with no resolution at all?
None that I could remember, Camina, really. It seems that whether it was a big problem or a small problem, eventually there were consensus. Some had to give way, which everybody agreed. So I thought it was worthwhile getting into that room.
Did you ever dread being called to that room?
Nope.
'Cause you needed it also, huh?
Yes, exactly. You know, I remembered, Carmina, when we were putting up the signage in Ipugao for the rice terraces to become the eighth wonder of the world. As you know, the eighth wonder of the world is actually designated by the Civil Engineering Association of America. And so we brought them here and said, you know, we've been waiting for the rice terraces to be pronounced as the eighth wonder of the world. And so they visited and they got it done. And on the day of the launch of the president, he was going there to actually unveil the signage. We encountered problem on the on the air. No, we were using the helicopters. And, you know, I was with the president, and he grabbed the phone from the captain, and he said, he called all the three other helicopters with us and said, can you please stay put? We might bump each other if we start moving. He says, let's wait until we find a small opening, and we will go down. Hmm. And in a few minutes, there was a small opening, and he says, okay, now you can go down, he told the pilot. There will be a river. Follow the river. There will be a school. We go down in the school, and later on, we all go down to the market, and we will have coffee and pandesal. Carmina, I was there, and I just said, oh, my God, you know, how he knows those places and what he's going to do. And here we are. We go down. We go to the market, take pandesal. On the way back, we saw a van, and he stopped the van, and he said, can you bring us to the rice terraces? And the guy was not answering. He was so shocked because it was 5 o'clock in the morning. And I said, can you please bring us? He is the president. I said, oh, my God, yes. I was not ready for him, you know, at this time of the morning.
Who would be?
Yeah. And he brings us there. And on the way, we get to a camp, a PC camp. Mm. And there was this guard. And he says, can you please call the commander? And he said, yes, sir. So he goes back. And when the commander came back, he said, can we do some push-ups? And he started doing the push-ups, you know. At 22, the guard was coming down. You know, at 35, the commander was coming down. And FDR was still there, you know, up to 60, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
And he said, okay, next time I come, make sure that you can do 60. You know?
Very so, fond memories that you have of the former president, former secretary. But now a portrait, a wreath, and a simple white cross bearing his name and the position he once held now mark the gravesite of the former leader that you just spoke fondly of. But we talk about, but now we talk about the mark that he has left in your life. When you talk about that, what can you say, Secretary?
One that every cabinet member has mentioned is the CSW, Complete Staff Work. Mm. I think that experience was brought, you know, to all of us, and everyone that we're doing now actually looks at that system of policy that we had that makes sure that anyone that prepares a project, you know, makes sure that everybody is involved. So from the budget, you know, to agencies that will be be touched. And now that I am in private sector, we have to do that, because if we don't, we can be sure that we will miss out certain things, no? Complete Staff Work, and I think he was very disciplined. And in many words, he had such an enormous human relations that he was able to balance this. And that's something that I will never forget, because, you know, he could be so strict that, you know, the cabinet would not want to cross his path, no? Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, he knows how to make sure that everybody knows that he means well, you know? And I think that's one that registers with me. The other one is that I guess... you know, top of the mind would be that the cabinet was so close to each other. He actually made us feel as part of his family. And for a long, long time after he was president, he would call us to meetings in his home. And all of us, after we left the house, would be saying, the president still has a hangover. I think he thinks that he's still president, you know, because he will give us instructions one by one.
And yet you would still follow him.
Yes.
So it was that kind of a relationship. The loyalty was there. The love for you guys was there. Yeah. But you were still very loyal to him in the end, up to the very end. What are you going to miss most about him?
I think he was very decisive. when you talk to him, he was not a military man, he's a technocrat, you know. He knew where he wanted to go, and he will guide you along the way, you know. And if you told him something, he knew where you wanted to go, you know, and he will support you. It's something that I guess every one of us really would miss, no? You know, I remember when I was made a committee of the Tourism Committee of the World Bank. It was the first time that a minister, was invited to Washington, D.C. during the World Bank meeting. And at the end of my presentation, I was invited to become a member of the Tourism Committee. One thing that I would remember him is that he knows when to call and when to congratulate you. You know, I was in Washington, D.C., and he called up and said, "Mina, congratulations. I just heard the good news." You know, and he was, you know, watching somewhere. I don't know, but he knew about it, you know, even before it landed the newspapers. And he knew how to congratulate, to say something that would make you feel that he remembers all the things that we are doing. And I think that goes for every cabinet member. You know, they had their own set of programs and encounters with the president that would actually remind them of how he appreciated good work.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. Former Tourism Secretary Mina Gabor, we appreciate you joining us here this afternoon. Thanks again. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you.
And from there, we're going to take a quick break. Up ahead, the Philippine economy expands less than expected in the second quarter, but in a pace still in line with government's target. Also later, a look at how the markets are reacting to the country's GDP print. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with ANC. We're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Back with more news. The Philippine economy grows less than expected in the second quarter of the year. Our very own Warren de Guzman now joins us with more details. Warren, over to you.
Hello, Carmina. The Philippine economy grew 7.4% in the second quarter. This was slower than the first quarter's expansion of 8.2% and the 12.1% growth rate hit in the second quarter of 2021. Socio-Economic Planning Secretary Arsenio Balisacan says growth was slowed by the impact of elevated inflation. He highlighted its effect on manufacturing. Quote, "The manufacturing sector's growth decelerated to 2.1% in the second quarter, down from 22.4% in the same quarter last year. The slowdown was due to the weaker growth in computers, electronic and optical products, chemical and chemical products, and food products. The slowdown may be due to inflationary pressures brought about by the Russia-Ukraine war, weakening global demand, and supply chain disruptions brought by lockdowns in China." National statistician Undersecretary Dennis Mapa added that the seasonally adjusted quarter-on-quarter growth rate for services declined by 0.4%, but he also noted that the seasonally adjusted household final consumption expenditure for the second quarter was reduced to negative 0.7% from the first quarter of 2.1%, and so that contributed to the decline in the services sector. The second quarter GDP expansion was also lower than most private sector economists' expectations. However, Secretary Balisacan noted the growth rate is still the second highest in Asia, behind only Vietnam's 7.7% expansion, although certain major economies like Malaysia and Thailand have yet to report. Undersecretary Mapa also noted that after the first half, the Philippine economy has grown to a size larger than pre-pandemic levels. He said, quote, "In the first half of 2022, the current GDP value was 10.32 trillion pesos, and this is higher compared to the first half of 2019's 9.29 trillion. For constant prices, the first half of 2022, it was at 9.6 trillion compared to the first half of 2019's 9.49 trillion. So both in current and constant prices, the size of the GDP is already higher than 2019. Balisacan adds the 6.5 to 7.5% full-year growth target for 2022 is quite attainable, as the Philippines will only need to grow by 5.3% in the second half to hit the low end of that goal. The main plan, the short-term plan of the social or the economic team right now is to continue supporting growth through the full reopening of the economy this year, and that includes a return to 100% face-to-face classes that is expected to generate jobs in support sectors as well as in the education system. Carmina, back to you.
Thanks a lot, Warren de Guzman. And let's now bring in Michelle Long to see how the market is reacting to the country's second quarter GDP print. Michelle, over to you.
Hi, Carmina. Well, Philippine shares wobbled alongside most Asian markets Tuesday as investors, you know, in the region, they're turning their focus on U.S. inflation data and the Fed outlook. But here at home, there's another reason for that somber mood, and that is the second quarter GDP data, which missed estimates and consensus. The Philippine economy, as Warren just mentioned, grew at 7.4% in the April to June period, below market consensus of 8.6%, also below the 10% growth mentioned by Finance Chief Ben Diokno earlier this year. The culprit, still high inflation. So how is the PSE index reacting? Well, the PSEI is down, ended down by a third of 1% this morning, but still above 6,400. Value turnover, 8.7 billion. You've got 87 decliners, slightly outnumbering 83 advancers. For this morning, we're also looking very closely at the share price movements of our telco giants, Globe, PLDT, and Dito Telecommunity. Now, remember, yesterday, Monday, Dito said it has filed competition complaints against Globe and PLDT Smart, accusing the two telcos of abuse of their dominant position. Out of 100 calls, according to Dito, that Dito makes to reach out to one of the telcos, only 30 are able to get through. 70 out of 100 calls are unable to interconnect. For the other one, although they did not specify which one is which, it's even worse. They say out of 100 calls, only 20 are able to interconnect. So Dito is asking these telco giants to pay $622 million for this abuse of their dominant position. We're showing you now the share price. The ended morning trade, PLDT up by a third, but Globe and Dito are down in early trade. Looking at other corporate stories, we're still in the thick of the earnings season. Let's start with DMCI, which reported its highest ever quarterly earnings for the second quarter at 9 billion pesos, mainly due to higher selling prices for its coal and electricity and nickel ore output, plus higher revenue recognition from the construction projects nearing completion. Just an important note, at this rate, they've already exceeded their full year 2021 bottom line. Let's now break down the unit's performance for DMCI. Everybody actually did well except for one, Maynilad, which actually went down by 9% to 393 million pesos. Moving on to more earnings, Megaworld for the first half of the year posting an 18% jump in profit to 5.9 billion as revenues went up by 23%. The primary contributor would be the sharp growth in the residential segment. Real estate sales up 26% to 17 billion. For the first half of the year, the company has added some 21 billion worth of additional inventory, generating around 51 billion in reservation sales. According to Kevin Tan, the chief strategy officer, for the first time since the pandemic, they've achieved double-digit growth across all business segments, a clear indication that they are on track to their goal to finally go back to pre-pandemic levels for their core businesses. And we're also looking at ASEN, the energy arm of the Ayala Group, net income there for the second quarter up 25% to 1.8 billion, bringing first half net income rather to 2.2 billion, although they are still down by 19%. Basically, the good news is for the second quarter, they returned to profitability for the Philippine business, reducing the decline in the first half net income. They're getting fresh boosts from contributions for new Philippine and international plants, as well as easing of curtailments issues in the Visayas. Important to note, for the first half, attributable output went up by 11% to 2,482 gigawatts per hour, thanks to increased capacity of their wind farms in Vietnam, plus their solar plants in India, offsetting the impact of thermal outages for the first quarter. And finally, the Keepers Holding, this is the liquor holdings company of Lucio Co of Pure Gold, reporting that net income for the first half jumped 40% to 981 million as revenues went up by 27%. The strong growth in sales is attributable to robust sales performance from all categories, particularly the recovering demand and consumption from on-premise channel, as well as the gradually increasing demand from travel retail market, resulting from easing community restrictions. And that's it for my end, Carmina. Back to you.
Michelle Long there. Mimi, thanks. And back here in the newsroom, former vice presidential candidate Walden Belyu expected to post bail today. Belyu was arrested Monday over a cyber libel case filed by former Davao City Information Officer Jeffrey Tupas. His former running mate, Calioni de Guzman, says their camp has prepared the 48,000 peso bail money.
Tingin niya kakayanin. Kung meron nga lang daw, kung hindi lang daw late yung pagkaka-aresto kagabi, baka kayanin. Dahil naka-prepare naman yung team ng mga lawyer at saka yung pondo na ipambabayad doon sa bail. Kaya tingin namin, mabilis na yon. Naging mabait daw. Hanggang sa dulo, no? Kagabi, ini-offer pa nung sa Taringal yung isang opisina ng opisyal na doon na matulog si Walden. Kaya wala namang problema doon sa pagkaka-aresto at handling sa kanya hanggang sa kagabi.
The cyber libel case stems from Belyu's online post claiming Tupas was among those arrested during an illegal drug raid at a beach party in November. Tupas has repeatedly denied Belyu's claim. As for Belyu, he insists the case against him is politically motivated.
I am innocent of the charges of cyber libel that has been filed by the camp of Vice President Sara Duterte. It is pure political persecution. She has no right to order my arrest.
Anger mounts over the arrest of former vice presidential candidate Belyu. The group Labanang Masa describes the incident as a case of state-sponsored persecution and repression of the right to free expression. The Akbayan party list also condemning his arrest. Akbayan fears it is a sign of what may happen to anyone who will express dissent under the Marcos administration. The group reminds authorities to treat Belyu fairly and accord him the rule of law. The Philippines now on its fifth straight day of reporting over 4,000 new COVID-19 cases. Health officials logged 4,203 more infections Monday that's mostly from Metro Manila. 30 more deaths also reported, while active cases continue to be at the highest since April 1st. Despite the rising numbers, a health expert believes it's not yet time to tighten COVID restrictions in Metro Manila.
Sa ngayon, I don't think so, no? Kasi may metrics naman talaga tayo kung kailan magtatas ng alert level. Una, pag umabot sa more than 50% yung ating healthcare utilization, at kahit umabot sa 50%, kailangan rin natin tingnan yung ADVAR, yung average daily attack rate, and this has to be more than 18.
News overseas now. Former U.S. President Donald Trump says FBI agents raided his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida. The U.S. Justice Department declined to comment on the reported raid, which Trump said involved a large group of agents. He did not say, though, why the raid took place. But reports say the FBI had a search warrant to enter Trump's home. This comes amid an investigation by the Justice Department into Trump's transfer of official resident presidential records to the Palm Beach estate. The U.S. National Archives and Records Administration told Congress in February it had recovered about 15 boxes of White House documents from Trump's Florida home. China launches fresh military drills around Taiwan as it continues to express anger over U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to the island. China's foreign ministry spokesman said Monday the drills are aimed at delivering a warning as well as a punishment to those seeking secession. This as Beijing insists Taiwan is part of China. U.S. President Joe Biden, meanwhile, says he's not worried about China's military flexing, adding he's not expecting the tense situation to escalate further.
I'm not worried, but I'm concerned that they're moving as much as they are. But I don't think they're going to do anything more.
Taiwan slams China for flexing its military might around the island. Its Ministry of Foreign Affairs accused Beijing of harming the status quo along the Taiwan Strait and raising tensions in the region. Taipei is set to hold its own live-fire military drills. Exercises will take place in the southernmost county of Pingtung this week. But a Taiwanese army official clarifies they are part of routine exercises and not a response to China's military drills. Taiwan routinely stages drills simulating a Chinese invasion, the most recent one held just last month. The U.S. announces $1 billion in fresh military aid for war-torn Ukraine. It's one of the largest weapons package yet from America since Russia invaded the country back in February. This now brings U.S. security assistance to Ukraine to a total of $9.1 billion. The World Bank also announcing a $4.5 billion in aid for Ukraine paid for by the U.S. The funds will help Kyiv pay for services and pensions, which the bank says are key to easing economic impacts of the Russian invasion. Well, sad news from Hollywood. 70s film and music icon Olivia Newton-John has passed away after 30 years of battling cancer. She was 73. Her husband, John Easterling, said on Facebook that she died peacefully in her Southern California ranch in the presence of family and friends. Newton-John gained worldwide fame as the high school sweetheart, Sandy, in the hit movie Grease. She starred alongside John Travolta. She also led a successful musical career and was well known for being charitable. Newton-John dedicated the earnings of some of her albums to fund cancer detection research. And before we go, Beyoncé shatters another record after releasing her much-anticipated album, Renaissance. Her lead single, Break My Soul, is her first solo song to hit the top of Billboard's Hot 100 since 2008's Single Ladies. Renaissance also opened at number one on Billboard's Top Albums chart. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.